Now stay tuned for the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call on 97.9 The Wren. The Wake Up Call talks with the people in Charlottesville and Albemarle County who are making a difference. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, everyone. Thank you for being here with us. Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. We always like to be here on Sundays. Our guest today, Sierra Bellows. She's a writer, a journalist, an editor, a filmmaker. Ms. Bellows' work has been published at our local Seaville Weekly, all the way to the New York Times. She was an editor at Virginia Magazine. She taught fiction in U.S. colleges, and she's a filmmaker on different continents. Ms. Bellows also won a 2016 grant for her novel. Welcome, Sierra Bellows.
Thanks for having me.
Well, our show today, an article that you were a part of, you were a writer and an editor, History of Women at UVA. And it just seemed so pertinent. We couldn't skip a show on this because in 2020, 50 years after UVA goes fully co-ed, correct?
Yeah. So back in 1970, was the first class of undergrads where women were admitted. And it's also 100 years since women were allowed to go to school at UVA in the graduate schools. So in 1920, women got the vote in the U.S., and they also could go to graduate school at UVA, the law school, the med school, other graduate programs. Women have been part of the university since the beginning, of course. Although Jefferson thought that a good education was the bedrock of democracy, he did not extend a higher education in his plan for women, for the university. But then there have been women working at the school, living on grounds, and also doing, you know, like summer classes for a long time. And then in 1969, there was a court case, and UVA was sued. The name of the woman who, Ms. Scott, I think, was the person who brought a lawsuit against UVA, and it was a class action lawsuit. It was representing any woman who wanted to apply, and said, you know, you should really allow women to study as undergrads. And the ACLU helped with the case, and then the school actually settled before there was a court decision on it, and decided to allow women to start attending as regular undergrads in the fall of 1970.
So I have it here that the court case, one of the things I found interesting about this court case, ACL lawsuit, that the lawyer for the women trying to get into UVA was actually a male University of Virginia graduate.
Yeah, John Lowe. He graduated from the law school in 67. So he was a young lawyer in 69, and Ms. Scott met him because she applied to work at his law office. So she had been going to another Virginia school, but she was from Charlottesville. She went to Albemarle High School. And then when her mom died, she could no longer go to school away, and she moved back to Charlottesville. And she got a job at this law office and was talking to John Lowe and explaining how she wanted to continue her education, but she couldn't do it in Charlottesville because UVA didn't allow women as undergrads. And I guess John Lowe didn't know that. He was shocked and appalled. But yeah, he ended up representing Ms. Scott and three other women in the class action suit. And then he went on to have an amazing career doing a lot of civil rights work. He seems like he was a cool guy. I think he passed away a few years ago.
I just found it, you know, I think I told you this before we got started. My mother went to school here in 1966, 67, in the education school, and we'll talk about the education school and its role before co-ed a little bit throughout the hour. But during this time, during when the school goes co-ed, there were 400, I'm looking now at the article, there were just a few students that were let in September of 1970, 450 undergraduate women were allowed, 350 who were first years.
Mm-hmm. One of the big concerns, I think, for the university about going co-ed was they didn't want to prevent male students from getting into the university because their spots had been, you know, taken by women. And so in 1970, yeah, it was, I think, 450. And then I think in 71, it was 550 female students. I think that before that year, because there were women in the nursing school and also in the education school, I have 18% in my head for some reason, but there was a percentage of students, but there's not undergraduate students. You could also, I think, before 1970, if you were a third or a fourth year student at like Mary Wash, and you had, you know, were doing well academically, you could also transfer to UVA. When they let women in 70, there was a lot of concern about where they would live, like the dorms for them and the bathrooms. And indeed, during the court case in 69, there was a question of, you know, like how will they, what bathrooms will they have? Like, how will we transform male bathrooms into bathrooms that women can use? And one of the person who was on the stand said, well, we could put flowers in the urinals, and that will make them female bathrooms. And I heard, and there's actually photographic evidence that back in 70, 71, women did put flowers in the urinals of several bathrooms on ground.
Our guest today is Sierra Bellows, and she's with us talking about one of her articles, History of Women at UVA. It's 50 years now since University of Virginia finally went fully co-ed. And there's a lot happened before 1970, and a lot has happened since. It took a couple years, and in 1972, the first female lawn resident, but it only took 10 years before was the first year that the number of women at the school exceeded the number of men.
I think it was actually 1980 when women were on par with men at the university. If you look at the entire university, not just undergrads. And then in 1995, women at the university more women at the university in 1995. And every year since, there are more female students, but by a tiny margin. But that's continued to be the case. Although it's also the case at most universities in North America. I remember when I was looking at undergrad schools when I was younger, I was looking at schools in Canada, and there was only one school that had more men than women, and it was the University of Waterloo. And I considered it. I thought, well, you know, maybe that would be cool. But I didn't end up going there.
Let's go further back in time. Pre-1970, the early years, and there was something called the normal school. Can you tell us about that?
So normal school started in 1880, and it was training for school teachers. And so that first year, 312 of those students were women of the 500. But women, they didn't get university credits for going to the normal school. Men did, but women just got a certificate that could, you know, help them with their careers as school teachers. But they weren't given the same kind of accreditation as men were given, even though they were doing exactly the same coursework. It's weird. There was a lot kind of going on in the summers for women at the school. There was also, you could take classes in home economics and cooking and stock judging, which is something to do with looking at, you know, cows and maybe other farm animals to figure out which ones you should breed. When I was working on this article, and actually at my time at Virginia Magazine, I would go through the photo archives at UVA a lot. It was one of my favorite things to do because there's just these amazing photographs of students and professors and performances at the school, the secret societies, like these beautiful images. And for this article, I found one, and it's an instructor at a summer school teaching stock judging. And so it's this man with a cow, and then there is all these women students in their very formal clothes and their hair up, and they're all holding pencils and taking notes as they watch the instructor teach them something about this cow. I don't know. There's pictures of the normal school. There's pictures from the summer schools. There's also a lot of pictures of women on campus. Well, like when I would look specifically for images of women on campus back in the day on grounds, sorry. There's a lot of like Grecian dancing going on. I'm not totally sure what that was about, but it was intriguing.
So at the normal school, they were being taught stock judging and teaching and nursing and and the article mentions home economics and cooking. What other jobs were available in the world at the time, or in the United States at the time?
I mean, actually at the university at that time, a lot of the administrative and secretarial work was being done by women, even then. My grandmother was a nurse, and then she became a school librarian. And I feel like she did the two main careers that women had open to them at the time. Teachers and nurses, that was the way for a lot of women to have careers. At the nursing school, at UVA, you couldn't get married while you were a student. You'd have to leave the school if you got married, which I thought was wild. That's no longer true, though. Now you're allowed to get married whenever you want.
I read that in 1894, an attempt was made to allow there was a vote about women being at the university, and a vote was taken. Can you talk about that, by Addis Mead and the faculty?
I don't remember a lot about that, except for that it was the Board of Visitors just decided no. that wasn't not something that they wanted to do. And there was a lot of talk about maintaining the culture of the university and the idea that UVA had a singular culture that was, born out of being Jefferson's idea and being a gentleman's university of the South. And so there was an idea that tradition mattered more than anything else.
Well, then let's move to 1920, when the General Assembly decided to allow women to graduate and professional programs. What was the change then?
I think that it was just things were already changing for women. 1920, they got the vote. And I think that the women were coming into positions of greater power culturally. Although in 1920, when the university opened up grad schools to women, only 23 enrolled. So they were still only 1% of the total population of students at the school.
Our guest today is Sierra Bellows, a writer, a journalist, an editor, a filmmaker, and as we talk about the history of women at UVA, we are 50 years later since UVA finally went fully co-ed. Let's take our break, and we'll be right back. And here we are, Sunday morning wake-up call. You know what that tells you? Today is Sunday. Sierra Bellows here, sharing the day with us. History of Women at UVA, one of the articles in which she was a writer and an editor. Sierra, we were going through some of the time frames, votes, and decisions, and how UVA changed. And in the 30s, I read that some of the wives and daughters of faculty were being accepted as undergrads. And in that process, I ran across a woman called Constance Page Daniel. Tell us about her.
So when I was writing this article, I only interviewed two of the women in person. And one of them was Constance Page Daniel, because she lived in a nursing home very close to grounds. I actually was able to walk from Alumni Hall to this nursing home where she was living. And she was 101, I think, when I met her.
Wow.
But she was a total spitfire. Like, she was just delightful to talk to. And one of the things that I really felt talking to her was, you know, how can you imagine, like, a woman who went to university at the end of the 20s and the beginning of the 30s? Like, you imagine someone who, you know, was like a, I always imagine, like, people who are very well behaved and proper and formal, you know. But she told all these stories about the kind of hijinks she would get up to on grounds and in Charlottesville, and it was really delightful. So her story was, she was the daughter of, not the provost, but she lived on grounds her whole life because her father was high up at UVA. She lived on McCormick Road. Her father was mathematics professor James Morris Page, and he was also dean of the faculty. And so Constance first went to Cornell in the late 1920s, and her university career at Cornell was paid for by a philanthropist. But then in 29, when the stock market crashed, there was no more money for her to go to school up north. So she returned to Charlottesville, and her father said, you know, we'll put you in the undergrad here, and you can finish your schooling here. And when she talked about what going to lectures was actually like, it sounded difficult. When she came into the room, the other students would start stomping their feet and make that, like, a really loud sound, like when she came into the room to sit down. And then whenever if she raised her hand to speak or, you know, contribute, they would do that again, like drown her out with stomping. And she said that it was like that the entire time that she was at UVA as a student. But then she talks about what it was like to live on grounds in general as a young woman. And she said this amazing thing. I'm gonna read it out because I thought it was so delightful. She said, "If you were a woman and could breathe, you usually had four or five men following around behind you. So my social life was more than anyone could expect," which I thought was very sweet. And she also, when I was writing the little piece about her in the article, that's kind of the story that I told. But when we were, I think I sat with her for an hour, and she told me stories about how back in the 20s, you know, on McCormick Road, and you occasionally hear a small explosion, and it was someone's gin still from their closet exploding because there was a prohibition back then, and so people would make their gin themselves. She also told me, she was like, yeah, the gin we made, though, it was terrible. It tasted awful. So you had to, you know, figure out how to make it taste better. And she said, I had the greatest way. You put it in a jar with some charcoal, and then you drive it on the bumpiest roads for about an hour. And then it was good. So I was really pleased to know that she had her, you know, she got off the stuff. She had some fun. She talks about, like, jumping in a roadster with a bow and, like, driving up to Afton Mountain. And I just, it was nice to try to imagine what life in Charlottesville in the 20s was like.
And this is Constance Page Daniel. Your notes show she graduated from college, had a college degree in 1931. So there's somebody, we're 40 years ahead of fully co-ed.
Yeah, yeah. And she made it, right? Like she, I think she was at UVA for 2 years. And I think it was challenging and difficult, but she graduated, she got her degree.
Yeah. It's great. let's talk about a few of the other, women, if you don't mind, that I highlighted, and we'll keep talking. Again, our guest today, Sierra Bellows, an author, an editor, a filmmaker. One of the others I made a note of was Anne, and I'm going to pronounce it, Kiesling. It was a nursing degree in 1964.
Mm-hmm.
She talked about being invited to, she had something to do with open heart surgery. Do you remember her?
I do. So Dr. Kiesling, when she was a high school student, she didn't know if she wanted to do like pure science or medicine or what. And so she started by doing a degree in nursing to try to figure out what she really wanted to do, what her real passion was. And so at the nursing school, the nurses would train at the UVA hospital. So they would be working with people who are already doctors and nurses, and also other med students and nursing students. And she got to work with Dr. William H. Muller. And he was the chairman of the Department of Surgery at the time. And back in the early 60s, open heart surgery was still pretty new. And Dr. Muller had developed a replacement heart valve. And so she showed interest in this and was, you know, drawn to what was being done. And so she was invited to team meetings and got to learn all about the logistics of heart bypass surgery, and how the parts, like the tools used in heart bypass surgery, were how they worked and how they're invented, and be part of that process, which was kind of life-changing for her. And she ended up choosing to do research. And she, after getting her nursing degree at UVA in 1964, she went on to get a doctorate in biochemistry and biophysics. And Harvard recruited her in 1985. And then in 1996, she founded the Bedford Stem Cell Research Foundation. So she became a rather illustrious woman of science.
That's so amazing. Let's talk about a couple more students. I have plenty on my list, but let's break it up a little. Let's talk about two more here before we talk about another topic. I have Mavis Clater, who was a nursing degree in 1970, and then another in 1985. Can you tell her story?
Yeah. What I remember about her is that when she first arrived in Charlottesville to go to nursing school, she had a hard time finding a place to stay because she is an African-American woman. And so she stayed at a hotel for a month when she first arrived and was doing her classes. And then when she ran out of money because she'd been paying for a hotel room every night, she went to the dean of at the nursing school. And the dean of the nursing school was able to find her a dorm room to live in while she was a student. And I think that Mavis is an interesting person to talk about because she was both a woman and also an African American, and the history at UVA for both groups is you know, it's been a long road, and you know, and today we're still trying to work toward better equality as a society and at school as well. But she ended up getting 2 degrees at the school, so she was very successful. And she became the chief of geriatric nursing at the Veterans Affairs Medical Center in Salem, Virginia. So she was someone who was able to put her nursing degrees to very good use.
Amazing. Sierra, you're a UVA grad, correct?
I am. I was a grad student. I came to UVA for a master's in creative writing.
I am married to a UVA grad. My mother's a UVA grad. A lot of female UVA women in my life, thanks to all of you. Sierra Bellows, our guest today, writer, journalist. Her article, Women at the University of Virginia, leading us to today's topic as we look back at 50 years since UVA has gone co-ed and 100 plus years of women at the University of Virginia. Sierra, another individual I love, I know you're going to get this story. It's going to make me chuckle because I've read it several times now and chuckled every time. Sandra Lewis, with a college degree in 1972. Actually, that's not the one that made me laugh, but tell her story.
So Sandra Lewis, her husband was at UVA before she was. He got a degree in 69, but then when the school opened up to women in undergrad, and she started going too, which was actually a question that got brought up a lot back when the court case happened, because there was an argument that women could just go to the women's colleges in Virginia, and like, why did we need to have coeducation at UVA particularly? One of the arguments was, well, what if you're married to a UVA student, and then you can't get your own education because you're in Charlottesville, or you have to, you know, have a long distance marriage while you go get your education elsewhere. So Sandra Lewis was someone who had been in Charlottesville already, and she also started her, she attended Fisk University in Nashville for a while her husband was at UVA. And then she enrolled at UVA in 1969 as a second year, because you could join a little bit later in your 4 years. When she graduated, there's a really beautiful story. Her family came and watched her graduate. And her father had worked as a pharmacy assistant at the UVA hospital. And her grandfather had been a groundskeeper for the university. And so she talks about how when they watched her graduate, she got to kind of be in the center of this institution that they had been involved with, but not in the same way, and kind of see her succeeding at the university in a way that was, you know, very exciting for them. And they were very proud of her, which I thought was lovely. She also talked about how she felt like going to UVA in the early 70s, it wasn't just women. That wasn't the only like thing that was happening culturally. There was a lot, because there was Vietnam War was happening. There was a lot of protests, and she said that people think of UVA as being very traditional and formal. But those were very tumultuous years, because, so much was changing and women were there and the war was happening. And, she was like, it wasn't the kind of normal undergrad experience that people often think of. There was a lot of stuff happening culturally.
Sarah, let me ask you, we have Mavis Clater, who talks about, she's an African-American who lived in a hotel because she couldn't find dorm housing. You have Sandra Lewis, who talks about the campus radicals. But the article that you've written doesn't really have very many negative issues to it. At the very end of it, there's the mention of Yeardley Love's death. But even that, it says that she's a strong person. Is that because you edited this out, or because the magazine at UVA said, we're not going to get into the negative things?
I had a lot of control over the tone of this article. And when we were interviewing people, we definitely asked them, you know, like, do share with us the struggles you had. And people did. There was one person we interviewed, and she had been, I think, in a lawn room. Yeah, her own lawn room. And a football player threw a piece of firewood through a pavilion window next to her. But she and her friends chased him down and tackled him and kept him at bay until the police came. And so then he was kicked off the football team, but probably mostly because, you know, if he could be tackled by an undergrad and held down, maybe he wasn't super good at that. But yeah, people did talk about having negative experiences. Another person that I interviewed in person, as I did with Ms. Page, Daniel, I interviewed Irene Can, and she was a current student when I interviewed her. And we met up at Michael's Bistro, and then we talked about the school. And she personally had had a great experience, but also, you know, talked about her friends who had less good experiences at UVA. And what I realized is, because I was writing an article and I was looking at for women who were great achievers, you know, women who went on to do amazing things after UVA, and people who just succeeded at UVA, like the people that we wrote about all graduated. And that automatically tells a certain kind of story. It's people that UVA really worked for them. And I think when we, you know, want to think about how the school might want to change to make it a better place for women, you need to talk to people who didn't work for and figure out how to make it work for them.
All right. Thank you. Our guest today, Sierra Bellows. And let's take a break. We'll be right back. And thanks for hanging with us again today, Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. Our show today is History of Women at UVA. Throughout the years, over a century, but today it's been 50 years since UVA went fully co-ed. We're talking with Sierra Bellows, writer and editor of an article, Women at the University of Virginia. Sierra, why don't you take us through and mention some of the key female professors that are part of the article and that you might have interviewed?
Well, the first full professor who was a woman at UVA, she started in 1963, and she was the first female professor who wasn't in the education school, the nursing school, and she taught engineering. And her name, and I'm not sure if I'm going to pronounce this correctly, but Doris Coleman Wilsdorf. She taught applied science for 40 years. And before she came to UVA, she was a lecturer in physics in South Africa. And then she'd also been a professor of metallurgic engineering in Philadelphia. She was just a very accomplished woman. She wrote more than 300 scientific papers, and she started two companies. She was someone who, I worked at Virginia Magazine as a associate editor for 4 years. I feel like I have almost like a degree in UVA because I was learning about UVA and looking through the archives and talking to professors, and talking to students. For 4 years. And that's after I graduated with my master's. So I was there for 2 years as a student, and then I was on grounds working at Alumni Hall for 4 years. And there's people who you, when you learn who they are, you start seeing like pictures of them everywhere, or you'll notice like their name comes up all the time. She was definitely one of those kind of like a, the sort of celebrities of UVA history.
About Lillian Bevier, that's probably not correct pronunciation.
Hold on. I'm actually just looking for her. I have the magazine open in front of me. Can you remind me a little bit?
I read where she was surprising because she was divorced with two kids and drove a Chevy Camaro in the early 70s.
Yeah. So she joined the law faculty in 1973, I want to read her quote because it's so good. I must have seemed like a very strange person to the people in Charlottesville. I was a woman. I wanted to be a law professor. I was divorced. I had two kids. I drove a 68 Chevy Camaro convertible. And yet everyone was so nice to me. Such a great quote. She stayed at UVA she was the first female tenured law faculty member. She was there from 1973 and she retired in 2010.
You had mentioned to me, Professor Phyllis Loeffler.
She's now an emeritus professor at UVA, but she is a history she is an emeritus history professor, and she's actually done a lot of work on the history of women at UVA. And so I, when I was writing this article, I was depending upon her research a great deal. And yeah, she's the academic that you go to for this stuff. Yeah, she is able to tell the story with a critical eye, but also looking at the good gains that women have made at the school.
There were a lot of things. Again, UVA doesn't go fully co-ed until 1970. Some of the things I learned from reading the article, our guest today, Sierra Bellows, the writer and editor who's with us today. Pre-1970, no women's athletic programs. Of course, there weren't very many women here. 1972, it becomes law, what's known as Title IX, where it's required to have equal opportunities and funding for male and female athletic programs. 1973, University of Virginia adds tennis and field hockey and women's basketball. In 1974, women's lacrosse is added. 1977, the first female athletic scholarship is awarded. And you do a small piece on Jill Hawthorne Jones.
Yeah, I'd actually like to go back in time a little bit, because even though there weren't any women's athletics at UVA before 1970, there were two women who competed for UVA. One was Mary Slaughter. She was on the tennis team, and she lettered in tennis. And she was a daughter of a faculty member. And she competed, at the ACC for, and played tennis and did well. But she only did it for 1 year. And then the ACC said, no more women on the men's team. So she was limited in that way. And then there was also a swimmer whose name I can't remember, in the 60s. And she was like an Olympic grade swimmer, like an incredible swimmer. And so she swam on the men's team. And back then, the pool at Alderman was not available to women except for on Friday nights. But they let her swim with the team in practice. And she did very well, even though she was the only woman and she was competing against men. And she said that the only thing that was awkward about it was that there was no female change room. And so she had to wear her swimsuit under her coat and come from home and then walk through the men's changing room to get to the pool. So there were athletes at UVA who were women, even before there was female athletics, which is cool.
Good grief.
And yeah, and I think that back in 2011, Virginia Athletics provides $4 million in $4 million in scholarships to women athletes back in 2011, which is sizable. But yeah, and I we talked with Jill Hoff. Haworth Jones, and she was a track and field athlete in the early 80s. She graduated in 83. And that year, UVA won. And what I actually really liked about her interview was that she talked a lot about what it was like to run around Charlottesville, and where she used to practice, and she talks about running around what would become the Birdwood Golf Course and the dirt paths on O'Hill. And it just, she would even just run around the corner because she was, she also said that she, when people talked about how UVA was socially for women in the early 80s, she was like, I don't know really, because I was either in class or I was running. Like when, as a student athlete, your sport was your life. And so, yeah, you studied and you ran and there was no time for hanging out.
Again, our guest today is Sierra Bellows, as we talk about her article discussing the history of women at UVA. We've got about 6 minutes left, Sierra, and I want to make sure that we talk about the School of Nursing, because going back in time, there's some interesting pieces of information that people would find interesting and we should share. Can you do that?
Yeah. So the nursing training program, it wasn't the nursing school yet, but a training program for nursing began in 1901. And thousands of women went through that program. And it wasn't a degree program for 50 years, until 1949. One detail that I thought was really interesting was that in the beginning, nursing students lived in the attic of the hospital building. And then...
They lived in the attic.
Yeah. And then there was a measles outbreak. So then they couldn't live there anymore. And so then Varsity Hall was adapted in 1914. And because originally that was an infirmary, and then it became accommodations for the nursing students. And then it became a school of its own too. And it had a lot of female professors and, a female dean, many female deans, actually. And it was a... When I was writing this article, I actually talked to a few women who had been in the nursing program, and it seems like it had its own social world kind of separate from the rest of the university. But it sounded like, in a way, that the nursing students really liked, like they were. It was almost a college unto itself. I think that that's something that I want to touch on a little bit, is that I think often when we talk about the culture at UVA, we think of it as a kind of a monolith, like a monoculture, the ties and pearls kind of thing. But I think that during my time at the Virginia Magazine, what I thought was wonderful was that I found out that there were so many different cultures happening at UVA in each era. And even like when I was at UVA, there was different kinds of people doing different kinds of stuff. And so it wasn't like there was this one UVA thing, and if you weren't part of it, you wouldn't have a good time. I lived in Charlottesville for a long time after I graduated, and I ended up knowing a lot of kind of arty people, and it turned out a lot of them had lived in Brown College at UVA. So there's always these little subcultures happening, and I just feel like that's what makes it a place that provides for everyone, or not. Maybe not everyone all the time, but I think there can be a place for a lot of different kinds of people.
A few minutes left, and so we're not going to get to everyone and everything left here, but you talk about the variety and the subcultures that are here. And even as we get well past 1970, there's a woman here who talks about being a photographer at Cavalier Daily. And one of the key things was that she came out as a lesbian during her time. You've got a woman who worked at UVA Athletics covering the sports who ended up on Monday Night Football as a sideline reporter. You've got another woman who ended up, she worked for AmeriCorps before she came to UVA and ended up at UVA and opening and beginning the Take Back the Night annual march to bring light to the domestic violence. It's just all sorts of pockets all around. And I think that your piece is excellent. So just a couple minutes left, 2 minutes here. What do you see now since this article's been written?
I wrote this article several years ago, and then I was working more recently, with a business professor at UVA, helping write, teaching cases. So in business school, teaching case is a story that sets out like a business problem. And this professor was a female professor at the business school and also a racial minority. And she was like, I really think it's important to tell stories at the business school about women, and so let's do that together. And so we wrote about executives who are women and how they might have specific kinds of problems that come up for them because of their gender. And I loved that there were professors who were saying, like, we need to tell women's stories, not only to women students, but also to male business students, so that we can make things more fair.
Our guest today, Sierra Bellows, as we talk about the history of women at UVA. Sierra, thanks for a great article and a great hour of conversation.
Thanks. I really enjoyed it.
Take care, everybody. Hopefully you'll be back next week. 97.9 The Wren.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call on Real Oldies 97.9 The Wren. The Wake Up Call is produced by Dan Gould. Show archives can be found at SeavillePodcast.com. Be sure to join Rick next Sunday morning at 11 a.m. for The Wake Up Call, only on 97.9 The Wren.